So this is the 9th edition?
This is the 15th.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 15th, right, Casey?
Mm-hmm. You try to put one out every week?
Every week, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there was one week that we missed, but otherwise we've hit them every week. Hmm. But I'm slowly getting better at scheduling people ahead of time, mm-hmm. rather than like 2 days before I want to have people on, mm-hmm. like reaching out to mm-hmm. them. That's mm-hmm. like, it's tough to get people on the podcast.
Really?
Well, there's a lot of people that say they want to be on it, mm-hmm. but then when it gets down to the time where it's like, okay, let's do this. And they're like, mm-hmm. I'm too nervous.
Really?
I don't want to come on it. Yeah. Huh. Huh. Yeah. But we're live right now.
Okay.
So hello, everybody. Welcome to the High Five with Gage Hartman. I am here. Oh, nice. High five and out of the gates.
Hello, everybody.
I am here with Danielle. She is a business. Would you consider yourself a business person?
I started out that way. I consider myself a comedian. No.
Okay, former business person, current comedian, and transgender woman.
True.
That is quite the resume that you have. So. I think I have a list of things that I definitely want to go over with you, but I think the first thing that we for sure need to address is the transgender part.
Okay.
I think that's the thing that people are going to have a lot of questions about, myself included.
Okay.
So I'm actually really excited to try to learn a little bit from you and just kind of ask you what's on my mind. And I think that I just want to make sure that you understand when I'm asking these questions that I do not want to like insult. Like, I hope you don't feel insulted by anything I say, because everything that I say I'm speaking out of total ignorance of mm-hmm. this entire subject, because it's still so foreign to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for starters, when was there a certain time that you kind of knew that that something was different?
I knew something was askew about age 4 or 5. Some of my
really?
Earliest memories.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in what ways did you see that?
The just people telling me that I shouldn't behave in a certain way or dress a certain way. And I thought, you know, it's interesting. I mean, when you're a little kid, you just don't know. So, you know, I thought that I was a girl for a while.
Okay.
And then, but then you get told you're not, and nobody addresses it that way. And then you think, well, what's it going to take? You know, I mean, clearly there's a mistake here, so what do I need to do to fix it? And so I had this list of things that I started making to try to think, well, you know, well, women wear lipstick, so it must just be lipstick or something. And then you realize, well, that's not it. And so you keep going down this list, and nothing's working. And then for a while, then I thought that all people, and men in particular, thought that they were women. And
really?
We're women, yeah.
At what age did you think that?
Probably about age 11 through...
That's crazy.
11 through 18 even.
Really?
Yeah, and I wasn't until
so you thought that all men thought that they were women.
And they were just better at being men than
Weird.
I was.
Weird, yeah.
Until I talked to a friend of mine, and I said, so don't you think sometimes that you're a woman? And he's like, nope. Like, oh, okay, well, neither do I.
that's
just an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of funny. I think I would be thrown off if somebody
yeah,
asked me that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I mean, I would do a lot of research. I'd go to the library at my high school and look for books. There's like only 3 books at the time. This is the 1970s.
Yeah, so it's not like you could Google.
There's no
Google
internet.
Things.
The internet
right.
did not exist for general public use, and maybe the military.
Yeah.
So I would go find these, and the only thing you'd find in it would be like a textbook. It'd be like an abnormal psychology book, and then I would flip through to the table of contents, and you'd find like a little subtitle either. They didn't really call it transgender then. The word didn't even exist. They'd say change of sex, or they had transvestite, which isn't the same thing. And
what's the difference between a... What's a transvestite?
A transvestite is a man who knows he's a man and but likes to get sexual gratification usually by wearing women's clothing.
Okay.
So it's like a fetish that...
Got it.
So where that's not the case usually with transgender people, that's not usually a sexual thing.
Okay. Interesting. So you said from age 4 you knew that something
right.
was, but it wasn't until later in your life that you actually started making the transformation, correct?
I feel like the transition's been lifelong. I mean, I feel
okay.
like I literally started the moment I was born and misclassified. But the physical transition, the part everybody sees, which is the most important part to people because it's the part they see, everybody gives so much importance to physical image. And so the way people treat you is usually based upon how you look.
Yeah.
And with genders, it's particularly that way. And so the physical transformation didn't start until 2012. Yeah. But all my life, I was kind of building up to that moment because I knew that once I did the physical transition, that the way people treated me was going to change. And I didn't know exactly how it would change, but I figured it'd be harder to get a job. I figured it'd be harder to get money. I figured I knew that I would have to take care of my family. And so pretty much my entire, well, when I was in college, my goals were, my number one goal was to find somebody to fall in love with.
Okay.
My number two goal was to make enough money that I didn't have to rely upon anybody for the rest of my life, so that number three, I could transition physically and not have to worry about
having to rely on anyone else for income or anything.
Right, because back in the 1980s, when I was going to college, the early 80s, it was a pretty bad thing to be a transgender person. People were ostracized, killed, and forced into treatments that really weren't elective and can be pretty harsh. So
yeah.
I knew that I would need to be able to create a safe environment for myself if I was going to transition physically.
Was it interesting? So you said in college you were trying to find someone to settle down with. Was it interesting? I mean, did you ever have to like break the news to them?
Yeah, all the time. And
how did they take that?
And the first girl I dated for 6 years, I didn't tell her right away. And I learned from that one that was a mistake, that I needed to tell
her. So you told her like maybe a couple
of
years in?
I told her a few years in, and she did not take it well initially. And then she came around, but after then we'd already broken up. And I was actually kind of happy that we'd broken up by then. So, you get into relationships when you're younger and you don't necessarily know what you're looking for in a relationship. So even though I would have probably settled down with anybody that said they would accept me for who I was.
Yeah.
But that's not enough really to have a relationship.
Right.
You need more things in common. So then I had dated before I'd met this girl, but when I really started getting serious about finding somebody, the second person that I met, I told her right away, and she was pretty accepting. She was actually really accepting too.
So you told her like a couple of days or a couple of weeks into the relationship?
Yep.
Wow.
And then she had to take a job and moved away, and the long distance relationship part of it didn't work. It wasn't the transgender part.
Yeah.
And then my last one, I told her, and we got married, and we were married for 20 years. And then when I actually started the physical transition, it became difficult for her.
Okay.
So I think I kind of compare it to climbing a mountain. You know, you say, I'm going to start up this mountain with you, and you have every intention of being together climbing up the mountain. But then as you get up the mountain, the air gets thinner, and you just realize you can't physically do it. And I think
right.
that she had every good intention of wanting to stick together and be soulmates for the rest of our lives. But I think she realized once we started up that physical mountain that it wasn't going to work for her.
Okay.
So that hurt because I thought, we'd been together for 20 years.
And you have children, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And have they've been pretty supportive?
Well, we told them immediately. I mean, they were raised that way, even though I hadn't physically transitioned.
Yeah.
Until 2012, when the kids were born in 2004 and 2006, immediately taught them and just lived this like it was normal.
Right. So are you back? Would you say that you're kind of back in the dating sphere now?
Yeah.
And what kind of what kind of things do you do to try to find, I guess, a girlfriend? Are you on Tinder?
I have never been on Tinder.
I think you should try it. Why not?
Yeah. I don't do they. I mean, so this is what I've learned. I've learned that I have to if I date somebody, I pretty much have to tell them right away, which is an interesting situation to be in. Like, you know, if I have a joke where a man buys me a drink at a bar, which is true.
That would be
so
awesome.
A guy buys
do you ever do that to like try to prank?
No,
guys.
No, because I could get hurt.
Yeah.
So I mean, I wish.
Casey shakes his head.
My joke is, a gentleman bought me a drink, and so I did what I'm always supposed to do. I explained I was transgender right away.
Yeah.
And so his reaction, it was so sad. He just put his head down and started saying to himself, "Don't get an erection, don't get an erection, don't get an erection."
I think I've heard you tell that joke before.
But I could see it was too late. So I told him I already had one. Because that's what I'm supposed to do, because if I don't, you know, they become humiliated. The longer you wait, they can become humiliated, they can become violent. So I like to ask a personal question to return, like maybe, are you Republican? Because I don't want that surprise in the bedroom.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, where does it start? You know, I mean, how soon do I have to tell people? Because people are so caught up in genitalia.
Yeah.
It's so important that we put it on people's driver's license. I mean, you can, and we often, and we dress that way too. I mean, you want to be able to see someone coming from far away and determine, do they have a penis or do they have a vagina? And usually you can tell, but just to be sure, in case you get pulled over, it says, you know, you look like you might be a woman, but let me see your driver's license. Oh yeah, F, okay, you've got a vagina. Good. Yeah. In the bank, check it at the bank.
Right.
Passports. So it's really important. And then we have you know, what I call, you know, gender reveal parties, which is kind of like a penis reveal party. Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's you're at work and it's did you hear Sarah in accounting is pregnant? Oh, is she going to have a little penis or a little vagina? I think she wants a vagina. She can dress up all pretty. But Tommy, her husband, he wants a penis he can play with all rough and tumble in the yard.
What the heck?
Is that going too far? Sorry.
No, no. There's at this point, we basically have no restrictions on the podcast. We've talked about some pretty controversial things. We've dived into like religion and politics or dove into those things. And I don't know, those are all pretty testy. So talking about little penises and little vaginas probably isn't crossing the line.
I mean, because that's what a gender reveal party really is, right? I mean, people want to know.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess if you get down to brass tacks, then yeah, that's what it is. What do you think? If you have a balloon and you burst it, it's blue, and then if you burst it, it's pink. What do you think would happen? If you revealed that you were having a transgender woman or a transgender man?
Well, the parents wouldn't know at that stage, most likely.
It's impossible, you think?
You know, someday maybe with brain scans and genetic testing,
yeah,
hormone testing, it may be possible to know before the baby's born. You know, here's your ultrasound, and here's one of the variations on the vast rainbow of gender that your baby is. It's leaning at 63% feminine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, how do we dress that? Well, a little purple, I don't know.
Yeah, purple, I think that seems like a fitting color. So what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've had since you made the change in 2012 to where, you, as you say, you can tell from across the street that you are a trans woman?
I mean, I don't know how many people can tell. I don't know anymore. But I do know that when I first started, it was everybody could tell.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I couldn't keep it hidden. I looked extremely masculine, and I tried to live that way for 7 months, and that's all I could take. Myself just as a transgender person, but without going into too much traditional feminine appearance. And people are hard on that. I couldn't take it. There's a lot of women and men and transgender people who do.
Yeah.
And they have a lot more courage than I do in that sense. I mean, now, generally speaking, I think, I may be delusional, but I feel like when I walk through a supermarket now or a mall or down the street, that people don't care. I mean,
I would agree with that. I think that, yeah.
And but when I first started out, people cared a lot.
So what did you do to, I guess, de-masculine?
I had surgery. I had some surgery.
Okay.
I had, rhinoplasty and we can go into as much surgery as you want to talk about, so I had some surgery and I got better doing makeup. I got better at dressing.
Okay.
Practice. I could try to talk in a more feminine manner, but for some reason I don't try too hard to do that. I feel like my voice is my voice. Is what it is, and what's a woman supposed to sound like?
Right. You know? It to sound too forced either.
I get frustrated when I hear that women are supposed to meet a particular image, whether it's of a attractiveness or a certain amount of femininity, or the voice is supposed to sound a certain way so that you can be a real woman.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair to women and men. I don't think it's fair to men either.
Do you find that it takes you longer to get ready in the morning as a woman?
Not much.
Really?
I've gotten pretty good at it.
I feel like putting makeup on would take forever.
I can do it in 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I can do it in 5 minutes if I have to. You know, it depends. It depends on the event.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go on stage, I might be a little more careful and put on a little bit more.
Do you think it's easier to like pick out what you're going to wear?
I've gotten a system down for that too, because yeah, when I was living as a man, I didn't care as much.
Oh, okay.
And I was running my business, and so basically I had four pair of the same pair of pants,
nice,
but in slightly different colors.
Yep.
And so it was just
the same thing.
Yep, I would just get up and boom, 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 and I would wear pretty much the same shoes every day. So it does require a little more thought, but it's also a little bit more creativity and self-expression, which I actually enjoy.
Right.
Like the aspect of putting it together in an artsy way.
Okay. Do you still have some of your old man clothes?
Do you ever put
that on and wear it around to really throw people off?
I don't. I've thought about giving it. I mean, I meet transgender men.
Okay.
And I met one recently who's my size, and so I was going to give them to him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I feel like there are fewer transgender men than there are trans. Is that true?
It's about one out of four. But also the interesting thing is, and this goes back to appearances, is that transgender men, when you take testosterone, you grow a beard. I mean, if you want to.
Really?
And your voice drops. Whereas with transgender women,
I should start taking testosterone because I can't grow a beard,
well,
and I am a man. So I don't know. Maybe I just haven't hit puberty yet.
You could have a test. I know what your testosterone levels probably should be. I could read your results.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if you want that, because testosterone is a very potent drug.
Is it?
Yeah.
You think I might get addicted to it?
Well, it would probably affect your brain. I mean, it would affect the way that you think.
So are you taking? What is it? What's it called?
Like estrogen.
Estrogen. Do you take that?
Do
you find like, are you less angry or anything like that? Like less?
Yes.
Do you have a longer fuse, I guess?
I think I'm much calmer.
Really? As a woman?
But then again, I'm also more comfortable with who I am now too.
That's a good point.
So a lot of variables changed, and so it's hard to know what to attribute it to. But with transgender men, they tend to look the masculine role more, and so they blend. I mean, when you talk about the bathroom controversy, for example,
right,
you always hear about transgender women using women's restrooms. You never hear about transgender men using men's restrooms, because for some reason society feels like we need to protect women, but also because we don't mind the transgender men because they look the part. And
yeah,
if you look the part, you can get away with a lot.
Right. You had a very funny joke about the bathroom thing. Do you not want to tell it on the podcast?
Sure,
because
yeah.
I don't know if you like try to like hide some material so you can tell it on stage.
I've got so many jokes.
Oh, nice.
We can do as many as you want.
What was the joke about the Target bathrooms?
The
short version.
Yeah,
I guess.
Of the things I love about Minnesota, and a lot of places. I mean, but Minnesota in particular is how much freedom we have here. We've got freedom of religion. You've got the freedom to love and marry who we want, and I even have the freedom to use the restroom at Target that makes me most comfortable. So I was in Target this afternoon, because jokes are funnier when they're more recent. I was in Target this afternoon, and I had to go to the bathroom. It was amazing. I just sat there and sat there and sat there. Then the guy next to me said, "Are you going to shit in that urinal?" I said, "No, I'm just waiting for the right child to come in. Because I'm transgender, that's what we do." My friends get mad when I say that. They get angry. Like, why? I mean, why the years of counseling, the hormone therapy, the painful surgery? Why all that subterfuge just to be alone around children when you simply could have become a youth minister? Or a daycare provider, Penn State football coach, Republican senator.
I love it. I love those testy jokes.
So loaded.
I like that you get to talk.
Yeah, no, I like bringing Casey on the thing.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, you can talk whenever you want to. Casey, do you have any questions for
Dan?
Why
do you keep pushing that button, and then that's when he talks?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, when they come up, I'll ask.
Okay.
Actually, I do have one.
Yeah.
Do I identify as heterosexual or lesbian?
Yeah, that's a good question, because he was kind of going that direction, but we didn't go that way. I consider myself a lesbian, but I feel like I'm a little bit prejudiced that way. I feel like I really should give men a chance, but well, it would take a special man. So it's my problem, and I shouldn't be so stringent and just be attracted to a particular gender stereotype. And so I want to be open-minded, but boy, it would take a special man. But so I consider myself attracted to more feminine people. And
you sound pretty open about it, though. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
against the idea of,
given the situation I'm in and grew up in, it would be pretty hypocritical of me, I think, to be very restrictive. I dated a guy for 5 dates. I just realized
that. He was just a jerk or what?
No, he was super
nice.
Did
he smell bad or something?
No, you know, and a lot of women liked him. And he was very successful and he was a good person, but I just wasn't ready.
Do you have any good...
But so I consider myself a lesbian, yeah, at this point.
That's an interesting question. I never even thought about asking that. Do you have any good pickup lines that you use on women?
No, I'm pretty bad at that.
Really?
Yes. Just getting the courage up to
ask somebody
is the toughest part. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've only been on probably three real dates. I mean, I did date a woman for 2 years and it was tough. I mean, it was, cause I think I'm just still getting comfortable with myself. I'm more comfortable than ever.
Right.
Also, dating is very time consuming.
It is time consuming.
And
that is very true.
I really want to focus on the comedy, and I want to focus
right
on my kids, and relationships take a lot of time and work, and I mean I was married for 20 years, so I know what it's like.
Yeah.
And I think when I'm ready to settle down again, I will be ready to put that time into it.
Okay.
So that's what I learned from the last woman that I dated, is that she wanted to get serious right away and be together 24/7. And I just wasn't ready for that.
Yeah. It's time consuming. And also it takes up a lot more of your like mental capacity.
Yes, it does.
Like it's difficult to focus on what you're trying to focus on when you have like a girl in the back of your mind. Maybe she's mad at you or something else is going on. Like it's tough to focus on your work when anything else like that.
And communication takes time. It's hard to shortcut communication. Although once you really get to know somebody really well, you can have a little bit of a shorthand to communicate some points quicker. But generally speaking, people don't give communication the time that it needs and the patience that it needs. And I definitely know that it would be challenging for me to do that in a relationship now. Are you in a relationship?
No, I'm not. No, I feel like it's so cliche to say it, but I guess I'm focusing on my career.
Yeah, me too.
Right now. So that's, again, I don't know. I feel
it's not cliche because it takes, I mean, so that's what I would need if I was going to date somebody, but you have to be somebody who's willing to go to comedy shows 5 nights a week.
Yeah.
Or not be upset that I'm out late at night 5 nights a week.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And travel, and all my travel would have to do with comedy. And so.
It's, I don't know. It's time consuming. Also, I kind of like to just be able to do whatever I want to do and not have to. I mean, I'm being 24 and single.
Uh-huh.
I'm focused on my career, but also being 24 and single is, I don't know, it's pretty cool because it's like I can do whatever I want. I don't know. If I walk by a girl and I think that she's cute, I can say, hey, I think you're cute.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just tell her. I don't have to worry about like getting busted. Or.
So you date occasionally?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think you need to. Up
again. Oh my god. Nice.
So you use Tinder?
I am on Tinder, yeah. Uh-huh. I haven't used it a lot recently. I think maybe 6 months ago I used it a lot. I think that it's fun and I genuinely enjoy like getting to know
Is it always
other
for
people.
Sex?
No.
Okay.
not necessarily. I don't know. It's tough.
What percent
when
the
mic is turned back on me?
So you take it when you swipe. Is it right or left? I don't know.
Right means that you're interested.
Okay, so when you swipe right, what percentage of those turn into a sexual encounter?
0.0001.
Yeah, I was gonna say
okay.
The percentage that I actually match.
What times?
With is,
what times do they not? What times do they turn into a date that you actually enjoy being with that person, but then also don't have sex? You just become friends.
I'm not sure. It'd be tough to, I hope that my grandparents don't watch this episode. No, okay. I don't know. I honestly don't know like what the percentage would be. I think there are it's probably pretty close to 50-50.
Really?
Where I'll go out.
So you still have friends now that you met on Tinder?
Yeah. But a lot of the times we'll go on a date or whatever and we'll have fun. Maybe we go on a second date, we have fun, and then it's just kind of mutually we're both kind of like we maybe went into the date thinking like who knows what could happen. Mm-hmm. And then nothing mm-hmm. happens. Maybe mm-hmm. she's not kind of digging it all that much, or it's usually probably her over me saying that I'm not digging it that much, but who knows? Maybe I'm like, I'm not digging it that much.
So maybe I'm wrong then, because my feeling with Tinder is that there's always this aura of at some point we have to make a decision on sex. It can't just be fun.
I think that's kind of the way that it seems to be, mm-hmm. and a lot of people view it that way. But I wouldn't say that's exclusively what it's for. It's okay. Not like when you match with somebody on Tinder, it's not like, okay, it's obvious that this person mm-hmm. wants to have sex with me, so that's what we're going to do. It's definitely not obvious that that's going to happen. It's just a way to leverage technology into meeting more people. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can go out to the bar and, like, hit on girls, which, I mean, I do that as well. But you can reach more people through technology than mm-hmm. you can in
sure.
person. So
sure.
it's a way to – so you meet them on Tinder. That's the initial connection. But then you mm-hmm. still need to – you know, take them out on a date, show mm-hmm. them that you're not a creepy person, mm-hmm. show them that maybe you're funny or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you're not, it's not like it's you don't have it in the bag mm-hmm. when you match on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a possibility.
I need like, let's have Dinder.
Dinder?
That's right, just Dinder. I want Dinder.
So you just want to go out and...
I want to go out and really not have any pressure and just get to know them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, there are a lot of people that are girls that in their bio, they'll put... Mm-hmm. Not looking for hookups or relationships, just looking for a friend.
And
there are a lot of people that do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Or that's what the guy that we had on last week, Nate, mm-hmm. Nate
what
Lipinski,
the
Platonic, he's putting together an app. It's still, mm-hmm. it hasn't been fully released yet, but he's putting together an app called Platonic mm-hmm. where they just connect people who have similar interests, and it's not like a dating app.
Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to, again, connect people with similar interests
mm-hmm.
so they can go to dinner or go hiking or whatever they wanted to do. So that could be a good usage of that. But we're definitely going to talk about your comedy. But let's talk a little bit about the business that you started. Because
mm-hmm.
She and I had talked on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me about this business. And it's actually a really cool story,
mm-hmm.
I think. So tell me how you got into that.
When I was graduating from college, I was looking for a job. And there was this clothing store called the Funk Chic Boutique. That was
it rhymes.
The person who ran it, Kelly, she didn't want to do it anymore. And so I borrowed $5,000 from my dad, bought all the inventory, and went into the vintage clothing business, which is a nice way of saying used clothing.
Nice.
Vintage. And what I learned was I knew absolutely nothing about clothing. And so my first year in business, which I think was like 1988, my first full year, I did $12,000 in sales.
Mm.
And out of that, I made a $1,000 profit.
Right.
And
tough to pay the bills.
You consider that I wasn't paying myself. So that profit actually was just would have been my salary that I didn't pay myself. But I took that money and I had put it into a mutual fund. That mutual fund in 6 months had gained like 10%. After 6 months,
not bad.
I had $1,100.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, this isn't fast enough. I'm not making fast money this way. I want to make fast money. So
yeah.
I took that money out of the mutual fund and I invested it in the futures market in North Dakota.
That's dangerous.
Wheat and silver.
Mm.
And within a week, I'd lost it all.
Yep.
So I was back at zero. But luckily at this time, I was getting credit card offers because I just graduated from the University of North Dakota.
Perfect.
And I could get cash advances. And so I thought, I'm going to make that money back. So I started taking cash advances and investing that in the futures market. And after 6 months, I was $50,000 in debt at 18% interest.
Oh.
And
ouch.
And I owned a business that was generating $1,000 in profit a year. So at this rate, even if there's
How old were you when this was happening?
Like 23.
Oh, scary.
Like that. Yeah. And so at 18% interest, I mean, even if it's no interest, it was going to take me 50 years to pay off this debt.
Yeah.
So I realized something had to change. So I had a going out of business sale with the Funk Chic Boutique.
Nice.
And there was two things at the Funk Chic Boutique that would sell. And the location was at the basement of this apartment building.
Perfect.
So we were not in any sort of high traffic location. We were a destination, and we weren't really a destination place, so we really got very few customers. But there were some people who came to buy postcards and sunglasses. And so I got so I got rid of all the clothes, got a location, had a going out of business sale, made $500 from the going out of business sale.
Yeah.
Bought some carpet and made a counter, and then moved into a mall in Grand Forks called the South Forks Plaza, but it's like it was like a Class D mall, which we called Post-Nuclear Plaza.
Got it.
Because literally half the stores were dark, and the anchor store was a Kmart. And I mean, the rent stayed the same, but the store became much smaller because I only needed sunglasses and postcards. So so the square footage was really tiny, probably between the fireplace and here.
Oh, my gosh.
And as wide as this table.
Really?
And that's it. And I just lined the walls with really cheap sunglasses because there was only one company that would give me credit. So I had to only buy just their sunglasses. And it was like $3 a dozen. So they gave me $1,000 credit. Yeah, this is, you know, 1989, 1990. So I don't know, you know, inflation, maybe that box would be $36 today. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so I'd buy boxes and boxes of these glasses, and then I would spread them out in the store to make the store look like it was full of cheap sunglasses, basically.
Yep.
I couldn't afford Oakleys or Varnays or Revos or Ray-Bans or any of the hip glasses,
yeah.
The hip high-end glasses
right.
at that time.
The margins probably weren't
but
as
the
good,
margins,
though.
The margins were great on these little glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, I could sell them for $9.99, $12.99, and my cost of goods was like a dollar.
Yeah.
So sell just a few, and I could make the $275 a month rent for this location of the mall. So the foot traffic picked up because it was in a mall, even though it was a post-nuclear mall. and so my sales that year went up to like $27,000.
All right.
So, but every penny was going to pay off that credit card debt, and I still wasn't making any progress. Boy, did I learn how to deal with bill collectors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I may get calls all the time, because it wasn't just one credit card, it was like six credit cards, because I had taken out cash advances.
Oh.
So I still couldn't afford to pay them all off, but I just would keep plugging away, you know, and then, you know, the next year I did like $50,000 in sales. And then I did this experiment where I placed an ad in the back of the USA Today and tried to do mail order. The ad cost like $2,000, which I could hardly afford.
Whoa.
And out of that, I sold like three pairs of sunglasses for like $275. And it just about killed me. So I realized from that to never bet the farm again on a marketing plan.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, 1993 is coming around. Eventually, I had a store in Minneapolis and a store in Duluth and a store in Grand Forks. And it was still a huge struggle. But I was reading about the internet, at this the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
1993.
It was the new thing.
Yeah. I enjoyed reading magazines, like, about computers, even though I didn't own a computer.
Right.
And so nobody
did at that
time. So they were talking about this thing called the World Wide Web, and they were talking about how not only would you know how many people would see your virtual billboard, which, I mean, when you drive down the road, you don't know how many of your customer. When you buy a billboard in real life, they can give you psychographic studies and tell you that, well, you know, 50% of the people who drive by will look at the billboard, and of that, you can probably expect 10% to come into your store or something. But really, you don't know. But my store was growing, you know, 10% a year, 25% a year. And was it because I was a better salesperson? Was it because I had more inventory? Was it because I had new brands? Was it because of my marketing? I didn't know what the magic sauce was. But this article said that, and one of the biggest problems was the money I was spending on marketing, because it can be a lot. But the article said that when you had an ad, which we called at the time the banner ad, when the banner ad popped up, it cost you a nickel to get that in front of people's eyes, and they clicked on it, that would be an interaction, and you could track that.
Yeah.
So you'd know if you had this thing pop up 10 times where you spent 50 cents and someone clicked on it, well, then someone walks into your virtual store, your customer, your the cost to get somebody through your front door is 50 cents. That's kind of cool to know that.
Yeah.
And then if you knew it took 10 people, because then they said not only would you know that, but you'd know if they actually bought something, really? You could tell if they... So you'd know, you'd be able to track it from the banner ad to the purchase.
Yeah.
And so if you knew that it took 10 people in your store before they actually made a purchase, that it would cost $5 to acquire a customer. Your customer acquisition cost is $5. And if you knew that your cost of goods on that was $35 on a $70 pair of sunglasses, now it's math. It's not emotion anymore.
Yeah, now and you can just scale it logically.
That was like magic. So I'm sitting there going, oh, I love this idea, but I don't even own a computer. So, you know, this is 1993. Things are going along. And, I mean, I'm still deep in debt by 1996. So 1996 rolls around. And I had not paid down that credit card debt, not one penny. And I still owed my dad $5,000 for the original loan. And he was keeping track of the interest. So that was up to like $7,500.
The interest on the $5,000?
Yes.
Holy
smokes. I asked him for a break. He's like, nope.
No way, Jose. Yeah.
So, okay. So then, so 1996, I'd been running these FaxNet ads. I don't know if you guys remember fax. Fax machines. People actually used them in 96.
I've never used one.
We'd send out these coupons to businesses, and it would come out on their fax machines, and then they'd bring the coupons into the store, and it was something we could track. The guy who ran FaxNet, he came in one day, and he said, I'm going to try this new business idea called the World Wide Web. I want to build you a website. Are you interested? I said, yeah, I'm interested. I read about that once.
Yeah.
He said, well, it'll be $500. And I said, I can't afford $500. I can afford $100. Because I'd learned to never spend too much money on ads by that point.
Right.
And he said, well, okay, I'll do it for
$100. Oh, nice. So, that's good negotiating.
So, yeah, well, I mean, and then, you know, negotiating out of desperation sometimes works. I mean, when you really literally have a limit, it's like, all I can afford is this, and they want to make the sale.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it. And so he built this website, and the first URL, my first URL was www.digitaldiscounts/peeperssunglasses.html. That was my URL.
Try
telling that to people over the phone.
Yeah.
Or just when you're meeting them in person. And so, yeah, you see you have a website? Yeah, you just go to www.digitaldiscounts/peeperssunglasses.html. Okay, I'll visit your site. So I learned the importance of a good domain at that point. But so he built this page. It's this one page, and it's all text. And there's no pictures, there's no online order. You couldn't even email us.
Yeah.
You couldn't even email me. And but there was an 800 number. And this single page got picked up by the search engine at that time, Yahoo.
Okay.
Was the primary search engine.
Yeah.
And so one day in December 1996, I get a call on the phone. And the guy says, how much is your Ray-Ban round metal? And I said, well, it's $111. He said, oh, that's a great price. I'll take it. I said, okay, let me give you directions to come down to the store. He said, what do you mean? I'm in New York. Can't you ship it to me? I said, oh, so you must have been a tourist in Duluth. Oh, yeah, so you're probably staying in the Holiday Inn. Yeah, sure, I can. No, no, I don't even know where Duluth is. I found you on the internet. So I thought, oh, this is fraud. But now I had to go through the motions. So, because that's what I've learned, is to you got to go through the motions. And
right.
So I grabbed a piece of paper and a pen because I still didn't own a computer, and I wrote down his name and his address and his credit card number. And then we hung up the phone. I went to the wall. I keyed it in, expecting it to come up declined, but it didn't. It came up approved. So now I had to actually ship him the sunglasses. So I went into the garbage and I found this box that Ray-Ban had shipped me the sunglasses in originally, and I packaged it up. And then I walked to the post office, which at that time in downtown Duluth was just a few blocks away.
Okay.
And I shipped that off to him. And that was my first internet sale in December 1996.
That's crazy.
And then in January of 1997, I sold two pair over the phone from that little ad. And then in February, I sold four pair. And then in March, sales doubled again. And then in April, they doubled again. And then in May, they ran a pace to double again when I just realized, hey, there's probably something to this internet thing.
Yeah.
And so I closed my other two stores, and I taught myself. And so I brought all the inventory to Duluth. And I taught myself how to make a website using Front Page Beta. Anybody remembers Front Page Beta? And I got to know the CP Internet, which was owned by Chad Brofflot, who died of a brain cancer. And that was a horrible loss. He was one of my best mentors. His business was always a few steps of mine. Mm. But so we worked together to set up Front Page extensions at his ISP. And I eventually built a website that could do online ordering and had photos and could take email. And then, so in 1996, my sales were $200,000, and that was across three stores, so I was still only paying myself $12,000 a year, seriously.
Wow.
So in 1996, I was living in an apartment on 3rd Street and 19th on the fifth floor, five-floor walk-up, and I had to walk up outside in the middle of January. For 7 years, I lived in that apartment.
Holy
because
cow.
It only cost me $275 a month, and that included the heat.
That's not bad.
And the electricity.
Nope, that's
so it was
not bad.
$275.
Yeah.
And I would just go there, sleep, and then go to the store.
Right.
And
so what was that 7 year span? Was that like 24
to 31?
That was
1993 to 2000.
Okay.
1992 to 2000 to 1993 to 1999. 1999 is when I finally had enough money, which we will get to that point. So I mean,
got it.
So in 90, so my annual sales were $200,000 in 1996, which
okay.
Because you're in business, you know that that's not your profit.
No.
I mean, you have insurance, you've got rent, you've got labor, you've got all those credit card expenses where you have to pay all that interest fees that I've been paying because I didn't file bankruptcy because I should have filed bankruptcy, but I didn't file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And then in 1997, sales went to $475,000. So sales more than doubled. And that was the year I finally paid off my dad with interest.
Wow.
Although I tried to negotiate with him too. I said, Dad, I've got all these credit card debt. I'll pay you first if you cut me a deal.
Yeah.
Or I'll pay the credit cards first because they're charging me more interest. And he said, I'm not going to cut you a deal. So I started negotiating with the credit card companies, and I eventually paid all those off in 1997 too. So by 1998, I was completely out of debt.
Wow.
And my sales...
That had to have felt good.
It was amazing. And I even paid off my student debt by 1998 because my sales had gone to $1.5 million in 98. And then in 99, it was on pace to do $3 million. And I got an offer from some VC guys. So I get this, so I'm sitting in my office in 99, and the phone rings, and I go, hello, is this Mr. Trollo? And I go, yes, and I go, which it was at the time. And
yeah.
I said, yes, and I go, we've identified your company as the largest eyewear retailer on the internet. And
that's so awesome.
And I'm doing $3 million a year, and Luxottica's doing $2 billion a year. And it just shows how small the internet was in 1999,
right.
That they
yeah.
thought I was the biggest.
Yeah.
And so they tell me they wanted to do a roll-up, and then they said, we'll write you a big check, and we're going to acquire these other companies. We'll move them all to Duluth, and you can run them. And I thought, really? Sounds amazing to me.
Yeah.
I'm on board. So they flew me out to New York and sat at a table that was longer than this room, and it was like five investment bankers and three lawyers on one side of the table and me on the other side of the table, and they just put me through the ringer. And they kept me out in New York for 2 weeks, kept trying to talk me down on my price. But eventually I left there with a check and a lot of stock, which I don't know how much you want to go further with the story.
No, yes, you can keep going. Definitely.
Okay, so I'm sitting at the table. And you know, they're like, well, why do you want all this money? Because you want to buy a house on Lake Superior? Why do you need this? And why do you think your company's worth this much? I was asking for $3 million, which
yeah.
was the annual sales of the company. And we were growing. We were doubling. I mean,
right.
we were doubling every year.
Yeah,
so
it's a fair valuation.
You put that multiplier to it. And so eventually they wrote me a check for $800,000 and a note for another $800,000. And then I got stock worth about $12 million. And I flew back to Duluth, and then they literally imploded, and the stock went to zero, and they stopped paying vendors, and so I eventually sold about $25,000-$30,000 worth of that stock, and so that's all I got. And they never paid off the second note, but what I did get from that second note was rather than going through bankruptcy with them, they gave me back my domain names and my 800 number, which to me was what the company was at its core.
Right.
I got back. We still had 30 employees at our peak there for a while, but we only were able to keep 8 when I got the company back. It's all I could afford to keep, and that was really painful. But so 2001, I started back up in the plaza below the Jubilee then. I think it's a Super One now. So there's a call center below there. I built that call center.
Oh, okay.
But then I couldn't afford that rent, and so I had to move out of there eventually.
Yeah.
In 2001. In fact, we moved on September 11th, 2001, because we were sitting there getting ready to move, but we weren't going to move till the next week. But then when the planes hit the World Trade Center, I mean, the phones just stopped ringing, and my employees were just in shock. And I said, you know, I mean, you guys, anybody who wants to go home, you can go home. If you want to stay, we're going to move today.
Wow.
So we shut down all the phones. We moved everything to our new location on Superior Street. And went back into business. And that first year back in business, we did $2.1 million, and I lost money for the first time in my life. I lost $30,000 that year, but I could afford to because I still had kept that check that they originally wrote me.
Yeah.
And then the next year, though, we did $3 million. We made a profit. And the year after that, we did $6 million. And then eventually, we just kept going again. And I sold the company again in 2007.
Wow.
So there, that's short version. Of that story. No,
that's crazy. Do you think you would ever start another business?
I don't think it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Starting a business is, there are very few overnight successes in business. It's about as common as winning the lottery, I think.
Right.
You see people who say, oh, wow, he just came out of nowhere. Well, there's a point where they come out of nowhere, but you don't see the 10, 15 years of work that went on before that.
Oh, exactly.
And I'm not sure that I want to do that again, but I would love to run a company again. So if anybody out there
is looking for a
CEO.
Turn
around a company. Nice. I can turn around a company.
What would be an ideal company for you to run, do you think?
I could do a retail company that was an internet company, but I could also do a tech company, I think. Because what I think my skill is that I can take cats and herd them. I'm good at herding cats.
Herding cats.
I can herd cats, which means I can get people to row in the same direction.
Oh, okay. I hear
so
you.
I'm pretty good at building a consensus of a disparate organization as long as I have ultimate authority.
Oh, nice.
I would never do my way or the highway, I don't believe in that. But I do believe in building consensus, and as long as I get to be the judge in the end,
right.
I think I can do that. Yeah.
Okay. So the comedy thing, how what made you want to all of a sudden start doing comedy, and when did you start?
Yeah, so I first got the idea at a funeral.
Nice.
So I was sitting at a funeral.
I like that.
And I thought of a joke, and I knew that I couldn't tell it at the funeral. And it stemmed from my neighbor dying. My neighbor loved to farm. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm, and my neighbor, people generally like farming. People who are into farming, you usually like it, but my neighbor loved it. He loved to farm.
Yeah.
One day he was out in the field pulling a plow. His tractor tipped over. He was killed. I went to the funeral, and the whole community came out, and everybody in the community is like, well, at least he died doing what he loved. And I just kept thinking, I did not realize he loved having his chest crushed by a tractor. And I know that I couldn't say that to anybody at the funeral.
Yeah.
So I thought, the only way I'm ever going to be able to tell that joke is if I get on stage. And I thought, I mean, it's not like that's that big mission. But what that did start was that I thought, I will never get on stage and tell a joke. I'm petrified.
Yeah.
I will never do that. And then I thought, why am I petrified? And if something scares me this much, but it won't kill me. I mean, whitewater rafting or skydiving, that's different because there's actually the risk of death.
You'd probably die even.
But getting on stage doing comedy, it's only a figurative death.
Yeah.
But you actually recover from it. I mean, you don't die
it's just
physically.
Like a social fear.
Yes. And so I thought, well, I've got to do this then. But it took me 8 or 10 years to actually. And then I started going to open mics.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get on stage. I just went to watch.
Yeah.
And what I would see at the open mics, and this everybody who's into comedy or wants to try comedy, this is what you should realize. When you go to an open mic, you are going to see some of the worst comedians you have ever seen in your life, which is fun.
Yeah.
And so when you see how bad people can be on stage, eventually you go, you know, I can't be any worse than
that. That's awesome.
So eventually I had 3 minutes together. I got up on stage. I did my 3 minutes. And I was petrified when I first got up there. I felt like I was frozen in place. I thought, you know, they say getting on stage is half the battle. Well, I'm going to take my winnings and go home. I'm not going to say a word. I got up on stage. But I eventually started talking. And I thought it was 30 seconds. But when I went back and watched the video, it was actually 2 seconds where I was actually frozen. So that 2 seconds seemed like 30 seconds.
Oh, it's not so bad.
No. And then people said, you know, you did a pretty good job. And so I thought,
do you think
okay,
that you did a good job?
Yeah, compared to other people, first
okay.
time.
Yeah.
Were
you nervous that you were going to forget what you were going to say?
Yeah, but I had it all memorized.
Oh, okay.
I had rehearsed it and rehearsed it and rehearsed it. And so once it started flowing, I was rolling.
Yeah.
And you know, so then the question is, I just used too many words and my jokes weren't tight. But there were jokes, and they were attempting to be set up punchline. But I just would take too many words to get to the punch, and then I didn't have enough experience to weed out the bad jokes yet. But
right. I think that would be kind of fun. Do you think, do you lean on, like, the trans thing in your comedy
quite
a bit?
So the number one reason got me was I was thinking of that joke at the funeral. The number two reason is that it terrified me. The number three reason I started doing comedy is because if you're going to change people's minds that are set in their ways, if somebody has completely made up their mind on something, the only way you're going to change that person's mind is if you're their trusted advisor.
Yeah.
Or if you make them laugh.
Right.
You can be a trusted advisor by being a friend for 20 years or maybe being their accountant for 20 years. And so if you give, when you give that person advice after decades of being their friend or their close business partner, they might go, huh, you know, you've given me good advice in the past. Maybe I will change my mind and consider that new way of thinking. But if you're just someone that they've never met, they're not going to give you any time of day on that. And so, but if you make people laugh, it floods the brains with endorphins and oxytocin and the novelty, and it creates the synapses in the brain open up to new ways of thinking.
Yeah.
So they're willing to look at things in a more positive manner, consider a new way of seeing a situation. So really, with comedy, my goal is to brainwash people, to get those chemicals going in their brain and brainwash them to my way of thinking.
Okay.
That's the other reason I do comedy.
Do you think that it's worked?
Yeah, actually, I do.
You think you've seen yourself change people's perspectives by making them laugh?
I don't know how it can't. I mean, a lot of people, just by the fact that they meet a transgender person in a less threatening situation than they envisioned.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm up on stage, they're surrounded by their friends. It's much less, because people treat novelty in very unique ways. So, like, if something that nobody expected appears in front, some people will laugh. They love it. They like novelty. That's why they go on roller coasters or they try new movies. Some people just love novelty and they react in a very positive way.
Yeah.
Some people, when they're faced with novelty, they feel threatened and they become violent.
Yeah.
And so the trick is to get people in these situations where they're seeing something new, but it's not threatening. And by telling people jokes and by being on stage and having them be surrounded by their friends, it's less threatening. So when they see this transgender person for the very first time, they kind of go, oh, you know what, it's not as bad as I thought.
Right. Do you think you were more nervous because you're trans to get on stage for the first time? Or do you think that maybe you had thicker skin already to go up there?
I think it's the latter.
You think so?
Yeah, I had faced a lot of I'd faced a lot of harsh.
So it's kind of like, what the hell are these guys going to say that I haven't already heard?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could say. Casey, you think you ever do comedy?
I think of jokes all the time, too.
And you're just like, man, I'm fucking funny.
Yeah. I was
you don't think you'd go on stage and
just
do it?
Just write them down.
All right.
And then give them to me.
Yeah, write them down. Email them to Danielle.
I'll tell them.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, but then, I mean, if you write them down, when you do an open mic, like tonight is actually an open mic. You could do it tonight. We let anybody on stage. I mean, now it's like because I've been going there for 5 years.
Oh, right.
So it's like I can actually have some, like, oh, yeah.
And that's Dublin's that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which she's performing tonight at 10:30, Casey, if you want to go check her out. People who are watching this right now, I can't invite them because it won't be coming out probably until tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Unless you really get on it, yeah.
So tomorrow, the pro show, I'll do two shows. And that one's a paid show. And the pro comedians that come through town, they are hilarious.
Are they?
I've never seen a bad pro show. And it's an honor for me to be able to introduce them and to host that show.
Oh, nice. And where is that at?
That's at Dublin's, too, on Saturdays.
Okay. And what time is that?
It's two shows. It's 6:30 and 9.
Okay. So
it's
if anybody's 15, watching this
yeah, it's
Saturday
$15,
morning.
But if anyone wants to find me on the website or message me, I can certainly get you in for less.
Yeah.
Maybe even free.
Oh,
depending
nice.
Upon how many people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Hooking it
I don't
up.
Know how many people, but yeah.
There's a guy, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, I was trying to throw a client appreciation party.
Mm-hmm.
So I hired a comedian. He plays at Dublin's all the time. His name is John.
John Peterman.
That's it.
Is that? Yeah.
Yep,
yeah. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. I hired, I have him saved in my phone as John Comedian. So I never remembered his last name, but I had him perform for me at a, at a show at Clyde Ironworks. I like rented a space and I like sent out literally thousands of invitations to people trying to get mm-hmm. them to come to this client appreciation meeting. This was like my first year of business in Duluth mm-hmm. and nobody came to it.
Really?
Yeah. I had like a group full of my friends mm-hmm. that came to it. I had probably five friends come, and then there was two or three people that I do business with often came to it. So I had like a built-in group of like eight people mm-hmm. that came, but then I was expecting like 50 because I was like, I counted 1,500 invitations that I handed out because I door knocked and handed them out to. I wanted to get as many mm-hmm. people as I could. And I had eight show up, but then I went throughout the restaurant at mm-hmm. Clyde and mm-hmm. I went to everybody's table and I was like, hey, I paid for this comedian. Mm-hmm. Nobody's here. If mm-hmm. you guys want to bring your food over and mm-hmm. eat and watch this free show, mm-hmm. then please do. So I think I ended up having like 25 or 30 people in there watching the show.
Were you happy with it?
Yeah, it was fine. It was, I kind of consider it a failure because of how few people ended up showing up.
Did you like the jokes?
Yeah, it was hilarious. John was very funny.
And he's a great corporate comedian because...
That's what he said.
Yeah, he knows just how far to push it without being too edgy.
Yeah.
And so being a corporate comedian like that is a skill that's rarer.
That would be tough.
Yeah.
If I ever became a comedian, I don't think I can do it.
You can't be too sexual.
All right. Do you think you would ever do that, or you like being edgy?
When I host at Dublin's, I have to be less edgy because I'm kind of warming people up, and if I get too into it too quick, it scares them and it makes them not any fun for the pros that come up.
Yeah.
So I've been writing more innocent jokes, like my kids told me down in Canal Park you could see a horse-drawn carriage. I said, wow, I did not realize horses know how to draw.
See, I mean, I like that joke, but I really like the Target joke.
That is nothing like the Target bathroom joke.
Any joke that makes, like, I like to see people's reaction when they go, are you kidding me? Is she serious? That is so inappropriate.
That's what
like
I
getting
too.
People worked up is like my favorite thing. I absolutely love it. What do you do to come up with like your material?
It used to be that if something made me really angry about being transgender, or to me was just a completely incorrect conception, then I would say, how can I write a joke about this? That was my starting point. And my ideal joke expresses a little bit of my soul and my deepest feelings, as well as then having a twist at the end, and then also has a life lesson to teach people something about the world. And if you can throw in two puns and one more twist, that's the ideal joke. Now, how often does that happen? Not very often, but that's kind of my goal in writing a joke. The perfect joke is one that has a little societal message, reveals something about my personal feelings, and just something intimate about me to the crowd. Maybe has a pun or two, and has two surprise twists, kind of like a bullfighter waving a cape at the edge of a cliff.
Yep.
As the audience comes forward, you pull the cape away, they're all standing on the edge of the cliff, but no one falls over, they just get excited because it was so fun. But when I'm hosting at Dublin's or somewhere, I have to tone it down.
Yeah.
Then any sort of wordplay, like the horse joke.
Yeah.
Anything that, you know, you can tell your kids. I think, can I tell somebody this to tell their kids?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Then if that's okay, then that probably will work. Or, you know, I don't really want to get here's a silly joke too, is this is a true story. In St. Cloud, it's my Christmas joke. You know, people are putting up the nativity scenes, and on the front page of the St. Cloud Daily Times, people were stealing the baby Jesus out of the nativity scenes. True story.
Okay.
People are going to the nativity scenes stealing the baby Jesus, and they're trying everything. I mean, they're bolting him down. They're strapping him down. They're using security cameras. Nothing's working.
Wait, really?
Yeah, nothing's working. But now, I mean, I'm no biblical scholar, but I think that when it comes to Jesus, the fastener of choice should be nails.
Do you think that one's pretty edgy, or do you?
Yeah, no. People gasp at that.
They do. I gasp because I kind of was like, "Oh my god, is she gonna say nails?"
It's a good gasp.
Yeah.
And I kind of like sometimes when people's heads go a little bit ahead and see the end coming, and then it actually goes.
Yeah. That's right. Do you have a joke that, like, have you ever, like, said a joke in front of a crowd and thought to yourself, that was the perfect joke? Like,
I
nailed that.
Yeah.
Do you find it, like, so you write a joke and then you perform it in front of a crowd. Do you think that you're better at telling that joke that first time that you've said it in front of a crowd, or maybe, like, 10 times later? Because I feel like I would get, like, the joke would become stale to me, so I wouldn't have as much fun with telling it. You know what I mean?
It has a lot to do with the crowd.
Okay.
Crowds, I never blame a crowd. If a crowd doesn't laugh at a joke, it's not their fault. It's my fault for either picking that joke at that time, not setting them up correctly, not leading them into it correctly. It's my fault. But crowds can definitely be smarter or have different personalities. Like I did a show for a group of couple dental offices got together.
Yeah. Here in Duluth you did?
Yes. And the older dentists who are very conservative were in the crowd, and the younger staff members of the dent, before every joke, they would turn and look to see if the dentists were laughing.
Yeah. And so if they were laughing, they were able to laugh.
They didn't want to laugh at a transgender joke or a Jesus joke. I mean, I didn't tell that joke. But so until they saw that their boss was laughing. If their boss was laughing, they're ready to laugh. But you know, you kind of lose the moment when you have to turn around to see if it's okay to laugh.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, so, and you've told comedy, or you've done comedy in places outside of Minnesota too, right?
Yes. And so, like, Brooklyn and Boston, really smart crowds.
Really?
Really smart crowds.
So would you say you like performing there better than Duluth?
No, no place is bad. Everything offers a new experience.
Yeah.
People are interesting everywhere, and everything is a challenge. I mean, if it was always my perfect crowd every single time, then I would get lazy.
Yeah, I suppose so. And you say no place is bad, but do you think there's any place that you think might not be good?
I want to go to the worst places.
Really?
I've been in the central parts of Florida. I've been in North Carolina.
And you're still able to make them laugh and have a great time?
Yeah. I had a pretty bad experience in Immokalee Casino. I was at the Immokalee Casino in Florida.
What happened?
The minute I came on stage and told people I was transgender, they stood up and started heckling and yelling and taking photos, and I could not get them to shut up. Another comedian in the crowd at the time had to stand up and yell, "Shut the fuck up." And then I started into my jokes, and I did my Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner joke, which is always a crowd pleaser. And so,
okay, what's that one?
Yeah, so I... you know, I grew up on a farm in central Minnesota, and when I told my parents I was transgender, they had no reaction. What really shook them up was when I told them I was lactose intolerant. So I divest that joke up was a dairy farm. So I grew up on a dairy farm. When I told my parents I was lactose intolerant, they were like, my mom's like, "Oh, your father's not going to like that lifestyle decision." Dad's like, "No, you look here, young man, lady. You're going to sit at that table till you finish your milk."
Young man,
but that's not a choice. I was born this way. Well, God doesn't make mistakes. You should try prayer. So, I mean, because I was born in 1964, I actually remember. I was 12 years old. True story. I was 12 years old in 1976. I actually remember watching the 1976 Olympics. I remember watching then Bruce Jenner win a gold medal in the decathlon.
Yeah.
And then appear on Wheaties boxes. Yep. As the world's greatest athlete.
Yeah.
The world's greatest athlete. I mean, back then, what little boy didn't want to grow up to be like Bruce Jenner?
Right.
I finally did it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's perfect.
That usually breaks any crowd. Yeah. Usually, I can bow.
That's a really funny one. Have you seen...
Did it break that horror crowd?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And after that, I was able to keep going. But but they still gave me a hard time even afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing there was a lot of comedians there because,
Right. And kind of relating to the Bruce Jenner thing, and you and I kind of talked about this a little bit when we had coffee on Monday, is what do you think about, like, transgender men or transgender women performing in sports against other people? Like, so a transgender woman competing against...
Well, at the Olympics, the Olympic Commission stopped testing for gender back, I think it was late 90s because it just wasn't working. It wasn't accurate. I mean, people are so blurred.
What do they do to test for gender?
They don't. Oh, back then, yeah. they were probably doing genetic swabs, testing for X, okay. XX or XY, but not everybody fits XX or SY, XY.
Okay.
Not every. I mean, you know, you want to say, well, women are XX and men are XY. Well, there's some people that aren't XX and some people who aren't XY, and there are some people who are XY, but they're born with parts that you wouldn't expect that genetic combination to have, and there's people who are XX and they're born with parts that you wouldn't expect them to have. And so you can't just look for certain body attributes, you can't look for certain genetics, and the Olympic Committee just threw up their hands back then and they quit testing. But then as transgender became more prevalent and people were becoming more comfortable in being themselves, it became more controversial, and so they, you know, there's this 800 meter runner from India, and she's really, really good, and she was classified female as birth, but it turns out that her testosterone levels are higher than average women,
yeah.
And so they thought that that was making her faster, but when they've done the research on that now, it's not. Maybe it makes a difference of 0.01%, but then how much a difference does height make in a great basketball player? I mean, so at what point do you say this 350-pound boxer is going to come up against this 200-pound boxer? I mean, they're both classified male, but do you not allow them to box each other? Well, yeah, so I think what it really comes down to is people just want to see the sport they're watching be competitive. They want it to be competitive. And so what do we do with wrestlers and boxers? We divide them into weight and height groups. So maybe that's what we need to do. But I think that any time we use genetics to divide people into groups, we're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
I think any time we say, this is your genetics, you're going to be over here in this box. These are your genetics, you're going to be over here in this box. That's just asking. It's a recipe for disaster. It sounds like sounds like Hitler. Sounds like it sounds like a Nazi concentration camp in the making to me.
Yeah.
So I think that's dangerous. So what they were trying to do then was to use hormone levels. If you had 5 nanomoles of testosterone per liter of blood, if you had more than that, they'd classify you in the male category. If you had less than that, they'd classify you in the female category. And if you're a female who had, if you have a vagina and everything that you think a female should have, but your testosterone level exceeds 5 nanomoles of testosterone per liter of blood, well, then you better take drugs to get it down. And now they're going, we're going to make athletes take drugs so that they can fit into the female category? So again, it ran into problems. So how do I feel about it? I think that anytime we separate people into groups based on some arbitrary thing, we're asking for trouble. But if we do need to separate people into groups, we should probably figure out a way that maybe doesn't have to do with gender. But even then, where it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a difficult subject, and I don't know enough about human anatomy to have like a.
And that's the challenge too. Is
an educated response.
You'll see an article on Breitbart or even the New York Times, and then you'll read all the comments down below, and they're like, "Well, anytime you put a man with blah 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 blah," I mean, all these people with all these comments, suddenly they're all geneticists, but they're not, or they're all endocrinologists all of a sudden. But really, all they do is sell newspapers at the newsstand, or they drive for Uber, or maybe they're even a geologist, but
yeah.
they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, in the stories that I see arguing against that is someone who was designated or defined as a man when they were born, but then is now a transgender woman who mm-hmm. competes against other women. They have like more muscles and their bones are thicker and they have all these physical advantages, not just the hormonal mm-hmm. advantages.
The research actually shows that that's not an accurate stereotype. Also, what I would say is that people who are transgender, they don't pick it to be great at sports. I mean, maybe in the 1971 when East Germany wanted to win a lot of gold medals, they'd reward some of their athletes to pump up on extra levels of testosterone in order to do better at a female swimming event or even a male swimming event. I mean, you know, we do say that, you know, Alex Rodriguez isn't supposed to take testosterone in order to hit a lot of home runs. I mean, we do have, the sports do tend to make their rules in that aspect. And so, you know, so what are the rules we're going to pick? I don't know. But generally speaking, transgender people are not wrecking sports.
Yeah.
You usually get one or two unique attributes or unique people, and then those people are held up as an example of why everything,
why the
world is going to heck.
There's a lot of that goes on. They find this teeny tiny little outlier and they push it to the forefront of an issue, and yeah, they try to make it a bigger deal than it is. I think that is interesting. It'll be interesting to see kind of, I guess, what changes with that in the future, and if it does change.
I think ultimately it'll be a good thing, and I think the challenge is that I think people are realizing that gender is a bad way to categorize people. We shouldn't be categorizing people that way. And when you start to put people into categories, you have problems. The system's going to break down. And so maybe we don't discriminate against people based upon gender. We find, I mean, if you really want to have something competitive, like you do a soapbox derbies or even horse races. I mean, when you have a horse race and you're betting on the horses, what do? They give them weights. They make them carry extra weights, and so they have a handicap. When you're golfing or when you're bowling, you have a handicap system. If the whole idea is to be competitive, well, then let's take the people who are really good and give them some sort of handicap, and then it'll be competitive, and you can bet on it till you want to your heart's content.
Yeah. Casey, you have any questions on any of that?
No, that was like the best way I've ever heard someone answer that question.
Thank you.
I've researched that question, too. I listen to Joe Rogan. Do not listen.
I know Joe Rogan. And, you know, you want to be controversial. And people say, "Do you like? What do you think of Dave Chappelle? What do you think? You know, Dave Chappelle's been really hard on transgender people and even Asian people." And I think, well, I mean, if you really want to listen to a comedian who belittles women and makes fun of transgender people and Asians, well, then you may as well listen to Joe Rogan because he's a better writer than Dave Chappelle. But they're both doing the same thing. And I just say, why listen to either one? Because they're both being that way. I mean,
yeah, I do listen to a lot of Joe Rogan, and I do like him a lot. But I can understand why maybe you guys wouldn't.
I do. Yeah, I read Breitbart. I watch Fox News, and because I need to. I don't want to end up being the person who only listens to public radio and reads the New York Times, because I don't want to end up. We're not talking a small percentage of the population that has the belief that transgender people are mentally ill. It's not a small percentage of people, and I need to know about those people, and I need to know what they're thinking. Transgender is not a mental illness. It's not categorized as a mental illness. It's not in the DSM, but a lot of people think it is, and then you read about the comments in Breitbart, and all of a sudden everybody's a psychiatrist or a psychologist and has had 4 years of medical school because they can diagnose any transgender person they've met, but basically all they do during the day is they farm in Texas.
Right. So what would you consider it?
Transgender?
Yeah.
It's a condition like being born with blue eyes or red hair. I mean, it's just, I'm just a unique person, just like you're a unique person. We're all unique people. And I happened to be mistakenly classified as male by a doctor back in the 1960s who didn't understand what transgender was because they didn't teach it in medical school.
Right.
But now we know today, and so we're treating people at a much younger age, and that is so good. I wish I could have gotten treatment at a much younger age.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's been kind of a hot topic too, when you start talking about children under 18 making like a switch before they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
So you think that
that you should listen to the kids. I think most of those treatments are not permanent. So like Jazz Jennings, for example, she did start her hormone therapy at younger than 16, younger than 18. But she clearly, I mean, you could just look at her and knew she knew what she was doing and what she was talking about. And then you know, one of the big controversies now is this 7-year-old child in Texas. And but they're not doing anything to that child that's going to cause permanent damage unless those people that think permanent damage is letting that child be the person that they want to be. So that child wants to live as a feminine person now at age 7 or 8, but some people think that that's child abuse, even though we're not talking hormones. We're not talking giving that child hormones at that age.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It's like, I think that so many people have such a hard time with it because it's just so insanely impossible for me to imagine, like thinking that I'm a girl, which is why I also am completely, I know for a fact that it's not like you guys are choosing to do this because
right, well,
for me, I can't even,
let's
I can't
look
imagine
at it, just,
it.
Let's say that when you were born, you were classified female.
Right.
And now, so you're living your entire life and everybody's calling you ma'am or telling you you have to dress in a certain feminine manner. And if you don't, you get beat up or you get just harassed or ostracized. And so you then, therefore, you continue to live within that classification because you don't like being beat up.
Right.
But you still know inside that,
yeah.
that you're being, that they're wrong, that you were classified incorrectly.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, I cannot imagine. I can't imagine it. So you're the 15th episode that I've had here. The previous 14, I've done something where I have special news of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But in hindsight, my special news has sucked really bad. It's,
okay.
The news is, I don't know, it's always kind of lame. So I think I'm transitioning into something where...
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. I'm transitioning into something where I get a question from my Instagram asked by somebody.
Perfect.
That I can ask you.
Okay.
So I have a question from Nathan in Duluth. And Nathan...
Hosts we've had before or guests?
No, I've never had him on.
I did not realize we were live.
No, we're not live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll see. He'll see it in the future.
Okay.
Or in his... He's watching it right now. And hi, Nate. His question was, do you feel like Duluth has been accepting of your switch?
Yes.
Comparatively.
But I'm in a unique situation, and my situation is not the same as a lot of transgender men or women. I've been on the front page of the Duluth News Tribune more than once. I've gotten...
For
business.
Oh, okay.
I've gotten awards. The business. I'm white. I have financial resources. I own my own home. I'm in a situation where people, because they've known me for a long time, generally have given me the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
Now that doesn't mean that some of them don't think I'm a little bit crazy.
So you're saying you had some advantages.
I've had definitely advantages.
Okay.
Being in Duluth, and I mean, money is such a huge advantage.
Yeah.
So many transgender women have a hard
agree.
Time getting jobs. They have a hard time affording medical treatment. They have a hard time finding a place to live. Their families kick them out onto the street. I mean, I have not had to have that problem. And so what I would say is that in Duluth, I have had a much easier time than... I should not be used as the standard to judge Duluth. But people have been... very nice to me in general.
Okay.
I mean, I've definitely lost friends.
I've lost
friends and I've lost business contacts. But at the same time, I've also gotten better friends.
Yeah. More genuine friends,
mm-hmm.
probably. Casey?
What about your parents and your family?
Well, I didn't tell my dad. My dad was super conservative. My dad thought that... you know, Nixon was railroaded at Watergate. So my dad would be considering Trump right now that, you know, he's being railroaded. But so my dad supported Nixon even after he left office, one of those 30% that did. And my mom, she had a really difficult time for the first 3 months, but now she's my biggest supporter. And so that's been great. My brothers and sisters, you know, it took people a little while because not everybody understands it. And even I had a hard time explaining it initially, and so I wrote up this big thing trying to explain it to people, and I was, you know, talking about genetics and hormones, and I think I just gave them too much information at the beginning. But my family's been very accepting now, except I have one brother that he talks to me, he's nice to me, but he doesn't buy it. He's very conservative.
How old were you when you told your parents?
Well, again, I didn't tell my dad. My dad got dementia, and so 2012, and so whenever I would see my dad, I just wouldn't even tell him, and he didn't really know because he had dementia, so I just didn't. There's no point. But my mom, you know, that I was 50. I'm 56
wow.
years old. I was born in 1964.
Yeah.
And January 1st, 1960. So I'm actually going to be 56 in a month.
January 1st?
January 4th.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to be 56 in a 2 months. So I'm 55 right now. But unless you believe life begins at conception, in which case I'm a little older than 56.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's a good thought. I never even thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there people that believe that? Or is that?
Don't a lot of people believe that?
I don't know.
A lot of people believe life begins at conception.
That's kind of sick. I don't really want to think about that. I don't really want to do the math.
Yeah, you
might
have a threesome
exactly when.
Just find a pregnant woman. There you go.
Oh, that's messed up. Do you?
It's also pedophilia. You,
is it?
One of my comedian friends says, two items off my bucket list.
Gross. That is funny, though. Again, I love that kind of comedy. That's like, oh, man. Oh, I don't know. I think that's pretty much. Casey, what are we at for time? Do you know?
I don't even know because this thing doesn't tell me the time.
I
think we're over.
I think we're like an hour and 15,
over,
hour 20,
like
hour 25. Did you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks.
No, yeah, I think that you, you're a very interesting person, a very impressive person. I was really glad to have you on the podcast. But
thanks for inviting me.
Oh, for sure. Is there anything else that you maybe wanted to talk about that we didn't cover?
No. We can talk about it for a day. We could talk about it for 24 hours. So, I mean, we could just talk about just transgender sports for 5 hours. We could talk about
exactly.
the transition. We could talk about business and marketing
exactly.
for an hour.
No, we definitely could.
Hours. Management. Whoa. I love management. Price theory. Price theory.
Well, maybe we'll have to have you back on
branding,
the podcast.
I love branding.
Yeah, branding is a good one, too.
I'll probably
snooze
during that one.
Casey doesn't care.
Well,
about it.
Then you would be a great person for us to use as a test subject, because if you start to snooze off, we'd have to spice things up.
We're doing
on.
It wrong.
We need
exactly.
Some, we need some power,
exactly.
More PowerPoint and and free samples.
I'm not the audience here, so you don't have to please
me. Yeah. What was the percentage of people that you said were?
It's as low as 1% or 0.7% or as high as 6%.
Okay.
It depends. It depends on how you measure it.
We'll be a little conservative. So 2 of every 100 people.
If you say 2%, that's the same amount of people who are redheads.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah. So,
nice.
So yeah. So yeah. Or left-handed. And that's what I think being transgender is kind of like being left-handed in that sense, or being a redhead. I mean, it's
what was the percentage again?
2%.
It's 2%.
Ish.
Or, I mean, some people say it's as high as 6%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it depends how you measure it. Do you measure
right.
it? I mean.
You said it was kind of like a spectrum.
Yeah,
so
it's
like,
very much a spectrum,
the,
in my opinion, right.
Where's the line? But here's what I'm getting at.
Like,
is,
you're probably 96% male.
Oh, nice.
Where's that 4%? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it does.
Sure
it also
either.
Bothers me.
I know. I feel like a guy, I guess. I don't know.
It bothers me that when people put certain attributes in the feminine category and other attributes in the masculine category, because really, what is the definition of femininity? What is the definition of masculinity?
That's
you have to
a good
be,
point.
You have to be
I don't
careful
know how
there.
I guess I don't know how you measure that. Although sometimes I feel like I do feminine things, but I'm not like... But I mean, I'm like, I don't know.
You're sensitive.
Yeah, you think so?
A feminine trait, which is you listen.
Oh, that's good.
In theory, it's another feminine trait.
Right.
Again, I don't think that those should be feminine traits, but they're often put into that category.
Yeah, yeah. I hear what you're saying.
I think everybody should be able to listen and be sensitive and be empathetic.
That's true. That's true. But it is. I think it's. I think don't females though have like aren't they more mentally built to be more like empathetic or maybe sympathetic, I should say.
Well,
as, like,
I'm not as up on that research, I'll be honest. But what I have, I mean, the little bit that I've read is that being able to test for that sort of thing is so difficult in our society, because our society is so, I mean, the socialization occurs even before the baby's born. So how do we measure whether someone is better at math, whether one gender is better at math, or one gender is better at language. I think we have to be very careful when we start to put, and then there's so much bleeding over in between. It's such a smear pattern that I'm not sure how to answer that question.
I'm pretty certain that women have a higher pain tolerance than men do.
Have you had kidney stones?
No, I never have. Oh my God, I hope that doesn't happen to me.
Stones.
Holy
wow.
smokes, that would
yeah.
suck. But I don't know why. I just feel like sometimes, or like, I don't know, like a girl will like wash her hands in a sink or something like that, and maybe she'll leave the water where it was at, and I'll put my hands in there, and I'll be like, "What in the hell is wrong with you? This hurts. It's burning my hands off." So I genuinely think that women have a stronger pain tolerance than men do, or maybe I'm just a baby. I don't know what it is. Yeah, who knows? Okay, so 2%, and I don't know. Let's say I have. The most views I've got on a podcast, I think, is like 350 or something like that on YouTube. But then I get an additional like 70 on iTunes and like 30 on Spotify and then Facebook and Instagram or something like that. So let's say that 400 people end up consuming this. That would mean that 8 of them are transgender.
Based upon general, being very generalized.
But they're just not, but maybe they're not like telling people about it. That's possible. What would you have to say to those 8 people who haven't told anybody?
If I'm talking to a transgender person who is still deciding how to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's probably not as bad as they think.
Yeah. So you're telling them just
it's not jump easy. In. It's not easy, but it's probably not as bad as they're imagining. It's probably not as bad as you're imagining. It's not to say it's easy.
Right.
And I wouldn't want anybody to put themselves into a physically dangerous situation, like with their family or their parents, because that can happen. Or their boyfriend or girlfriend or their neighbors. But my experience is that it wasn't at all what I expected. Some things were worse than I expected. Some things were better than I expected. But most transgender people think it's going to be worse than it is.
I couldn't even imagine. I remember in like junior high or high school, if I got like a new haircut, and I would be just petrified to go to school because I wasn't sure how my classmates would accept my new haircut. Just the smallest little word could just completely throw off my self-confidence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, much I don't know, getting, dressing like a guy and then all of a sudden you show up to work in heels or pumps or whatever.
Or even just done with longer hair. How people express themselves is I've finally gotten to the point where I'm able to go out to run errands without any makeup on.
Yeah.
I mean, I put makeup on. We're doing a podcast, and I enjoy wearing makeup sometimes. But there were times when I would be petrified to leave the house without any makeup. But I've gotten to the point where I do now.
So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's become more of a just a enjoyable. Artistic endeavor and not one that needs to be done.
Right.
But I do know that, I mean, I'm treated better on stage and in other situations like that. And I sometimes don't have the courage, which is my challenge, to be a less feminine transgender person.
Okay.
Because it's easier for me to move around and interact with people the more that I fit the look that they're expecting a woman to have.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's one of my weaknesses and one of my complaints about society.
Okay. Yeah.
So hopefully I can work harder to try to change that, but I don't know.
That's interesting.
That's a pretty ingrained. Gender is an extremely ingrained attribute that a lot of people are afraid to venture outside of, just in the way that they even deal with people.
Yeah.
I'm not just talking about themselves, but in the way that they treat people or interact with people who they perceive as one gender or another.
Right. This has been very educational for me.
Well, thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Once again, thanks for coming on. I hope that some people learn some things. And again, I'd be glad to have you on again someday
it'd be an honor.
In the future. But
thank you. Oh, five it out. One. Thank you.
Yeah. Lower the frame. You got to redo it lower.
Oh, okay. Nice. There we go. Perfect. Yeah, Casey hit it. Oh, Casey's on camera a little bit even. Okay. Casey hasn't been on camera, but he's been.
We didn't see the nail polish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, plot twist. Plot twist. Yeah, Casey's a girl.
Yeah, nail polish is really the defining factor. It has nothing to do with anything else. It's all nail polish.
That was fun.